What is going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode of the Freedom Formula, where we dive into people's stories who have escaped the 9-to-5, achieved their own level of freedom, and present to you exactly how they did it. And today's guest is someone who I saw online and I thought, I want to do this business model. So he got me very distracted from my normal day-to-day because I thought his model was so freaking fascinating. Ryan, welcome on, man.
Thanks for having me. Sorry to be a distraction.
Yeah, it's all good, man. And Ryan, would you mind telling everyone a little bit of background about who you are and what you're working on right now, and then we'll dive into your backstory from there.
Yeah, so who I am is, people like the word entrepreneur. I don't know, I hate that word. I feel like it's thrown around all too often. Yeah. I'm probably, you know, not supposed to get philosophical right now, but I like the term business builder because that's what I like to do. I started lots, but none of them worked. But now I've got my current one, which is a local email newsletter, and it's working. And it's about 3.5 years old, got kind of to the point of like stability and, you know, hiring people that'll make it grow quickly. And now I'm thinking about building other businesses. So I'd like the words business builder better than entrepreneur, but that's like who I am. If I had to describe myself in one sentence, I'm a business builder. Background is I'm a mechanical engineer that never did mechanical engineering. I was a software consultant. And then, sorry, I'm going to turn my do not disturb on. I'm just getting silly texts right now. I met somebody recently who I know, like all the same people back from growing up where I didn't grow up in Annapolis. And she's trying to set me up with somebody that I actually went to middle school with, and just getting texts about it.
Like, I'm on the podcast. I can't do this middle school dating thing right now.
I'm not distracted. Yeah. I can't do that. But now we're on Do Not Disturb. We're good. So yeah, mechanical engineer turned software consultant. And then I quit after 1 year to chase my ultimate dream, which was to have my own business, which is now, the dream has evolved into owning a couple businesses, or just, I don't know, more. That's always the dream, isn't it?
So, Ryan, diving into it. So what you do for your business right now, you run a local newsletter. When people hear that, they might not know what I mean. I mean, for like a local town, you're running a newsletter, which people in that local town can subscribe to. You produce the content and then monetize it with ads, right? Is that the main business that you're running in Annapolis right now?
Yeah. So it's called Naptown Scoop. And every weekday morning, we send an email at 6 a.m. And it's got the, you know, events that are happening that week or the weekend. It's got where the live music is at all the bars and restaurants that week. We have a couple theaters as well. It's got the summaries of all the important news, you know, traffic updates. It's effectively your local newspaper sent through email. Best way to describe it.
Like when I read that you do that, and you know, growing up, I grew up in a place around LA called La Mirada. It's like a suburb around, and we used to get those newspapers. And I was like, the only people who read these are the soccer moms who need to figure out what activities to throw their kids in. I didn't realize this can be an actual business, which I think is freaking awesome because I love how niche it can get. But Ryan, walk me through how you even came up with this idea. So you were working a 9-to-5 and you're like, let me go start a local newspaper. Like, how did this idea actually come up when you were working the grind?
So the idea did come up when I was in the grind, but I didn't do it until I was actually out of my job. So a little bit circuitous there. But so I was working for basically like first month of my first ever job after college. This guy, Matt, invited me to go to the new brewery that was in town. And I was like, sure, I like beer, but also how'd you know that that was opening? Like, I'd like to know about all the cool new things. And he's like, oh, you got to check out this newsletter. There's this newsletter I read that tells me all about where we live. And I was like, cool, let me sign up for it. So I signed up for it and I thought it was cool as a reader, but then I learned that the company that was doing it had six others. So I was like, wow, that might be an interesting business. And by that point, I already had like a couple small businesses that didn't really go anywhere. I was definitely in that business mindset. So I found out how much their advertising cost and I made a spreadsheet and I signed up for all seven of them. And I basically tried to guess how much money I thought they were making in each city. And I figured they were probably doing about $500,000 in revenue in each city, $3.5 million a year. Didn't look like a lot of employees. And I was like, this is kind of interesting. And then I forgot about it for probably close to a year, I think. Or maybe I forgot about it, but like, you know, put it in the back of my mind, kept working.
Yeah.
Eventually ended up quitting my job in a year exactly after I started with no plan. Did not build a side hustle, replace the income. Just pulled the parachute.
Walk me through that, Brian.
When I was out of there.
Why? Why did you quit your job?
It's very single point, kind of like easy to point out, think back to a moment. I was driving back. I lived on the other side of town from my girlfriend at the time. I was driving back from her house to my house one night. And I thought, as I drove over this bridge over the river and where I lived, I was like, if I drove off this bridge right now, I wouldn't have to go to work tomorrow because I would not be alive anymore. And I was like, and I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit. I'm not going to quit right now because I want to put a little bit more money in things. But I was like, I am 22 years old. I think I was 22 at the time. I'm living in a very cheap place. I have no responsibilities. Like, obviously I had a girlfriend, but like no kids, no, we're not married. I'm not responsible for her bills. My rent's $400 a month. And I was like, I'm not going to go to work, and work for somebody else if it literally makes me want to kill myself, even a little tiny bit. You know, that's like the only, microsecond of suicidal thoughts I've ever had. And I was like, nope, not doing this. I'm out of here. And so I decided I was going to quit, made a plan, you know, I have this much money, I will quit. And that kind of got me through 6 months. I never had that thought again. But I quit pretty much exactly. I came home from a trip. I was doing a lot of traveling, which I did love a lot. I just didn't like working for somebody else. So I came home from a trip. They were usually like week-long trips or two-week trips. I would get home Friday and I got back to the office, turned in my resignation the week or the day I got back from one of these trips. And 2 weeks later, I was out of there.
Ryan, tell me about the amount of savings you had. I think that's a big question a lot of people have when they're trying to leave the 9-to-5 is, how much savings do I need? And by the way, I'll tell you from my perspective, I was working a 9-to-5. I thought I saved too much. And I did it out of fear. I was like, oh, I should save more. I need 9 months, 12 months of savings. Maybe I need more. And the truth is, like, I had cash, then I had money invested, meaning I had way more savings than I actually needed. But it was kind of a fear of ejection. You know, I'm curious what your mentality was going into it, about how much savings you actually needed before you decided to bet on yourself.
Yeah, mine was I thought it was a pretty good amount for my age and the circumstances, but it was pretty much, there was no thought process to like this many months of runway, because I knew that whatever I had, I was going to invest into whatever I started, like businesses that I started. So I wasn't really thinking about in terms of like, these are my expenses. This is how much time I have to do something, because I knew I was going to use some of the money. And anyhow, I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, which was an incredibly cheap place to live. Sorry, I'm going to turn this heater off real quick in my office. My rent was $400 a month. I spent very little money on food if I didn't want to, because I could, you know, go to the grocery store and eat pretty cheaply. So I didn't think like that, but I wanted a decent amount so that I could start something and kind of be dangerous. So I ended up leaving my job with $25,000 in the bank, or like $25,000 total. I did cash out my 401k eventually and put it into what my current business. And I had I had other brokerage accounts that were pretty small. Ended up basically cashing everything out, turning it into cash and putting it into the business. And, you know, just, you know, still actually haven't gotten back into that investing side, like still kind of betting it all on the business. $25,000 was my number. That was just because I wanted to have enough money to jumpstart whatever I was doing. So of that $25,000, I spent $21,000 of it on Facebook ads to get the logo newsletter started. And that was possible because 3 months after I quit my job, COVID happened. I quit in January 2020, ended up moving to the mountains where my college ex-girlfriend had a second house. So I think I was still paying rent at my house in Columbia. I don't remember. I must have. But there was no rent at the new place. Obviously, it was a family house. And then eventually, like a week later, after COVID, everybody, you know, kind of thought it was going to be 2 weeks in the beginning. And then it ended up not being 2 weeks. Her mom ended up coming up to the place and basically bought all the food that we were there for 3 months. So Expenses were extremely low.
Yeah.
During COVID, and then after that, I basically left the house, broke up with her, and left my house in Colombia. Moved back in with my parents, where again, food and everything, you know, very low cost of living. So I pretty much put almost all of the money that I'd saved into growing the local newsletter.
And Ryan, were you, when you left your job, you know, you wanted to get into entrepreneurship. Was your thought like, I'm going to quit and let me do a local newsletter? Or did you try multiple things out and eventually decide, okay, let me go all in on this one thing because I see it has more legs? What was your experimentation process?
I really had two ideas of what I was going to do when I quit. I had already started one newsletter, which was a terrible, terrible newsletter that I called the Daily Thread. And it started out as a weekly kind of men's clothing recommendation kind of thing. I really like Made in America clothing. I like Huckberry is my favorite clothing company. I love that kind of style of clothes. And so I was like, I'm going to write about that stuff. And I wrote about that, but then I got distracted and I got bored. So we started writing about adventure sports and explorers, and it just wasn't very focused. Mm. And there was, I also just didn't know anything about what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I worked on this for an embarrassingly long amount of time. I worked on it for like 8 months. I got 800 subscribers with a 35% open rate. And I think I had made like $500. I think I'd only spent $800 on the thing, but I basically made no money. And I was like really thinking that this was going to turn into something eventually. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe it won't. And I thought about, then it was another thing. I was thinking about booking people's travel for them using credit card points because I'm pretty into that game and I'm pretty good at it. And that was just a terrible thing to think about doing during COVID. Customers. Obviously. So, yeah, those two things were kind of like total failures, but got me thinking in the right way. And then about 7 months after I quit my job, I kind of thought back to the local newsletter thing. And I was now living in a new place, the place where I'd grown up, but I had never really been very connected to where I grew up. And so I was like, I want to know what's going on. Because now we're getting into like August of 2020 and things are starting to happen again. Yep. We're also doing a lot of outdoor stuff with COVID. So I was like, what can I do? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Not like, what can I do as a business? Just what can I do for fun? And that's when I remembered the local newsletter thing. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty good business. So I wrote about it actually on an online forum and a bunch of, you know, got a great response. People were like, I'll invest in this. Can I do this with you? And I ended up being like, no, I'm just going to go do it. I'm not, that's not why I wrote about it here. I was just kind of wondering what you guys thought. And then I said, I said 8 months of the Daily Thread got 800 subscribers. First week of Naptown Scoop got 150 subscribers. Had an incredible high open rate back when open rates actually mattered on emails because they were pretty accurate. And then I actually sold the first couple ads basically in that first month. And I was like, okay, this is what we call traction. The Daily Thread never had traction. I'm going to shut this down. So I emailed everybody and I was like, hey, I'm going to shut this down now. And one of the readers actually was like, can I buy it from you? And I was like, sure.
Wow.
So I sold my first company, which was an $800 acquisition. sold the newsletter for $800. And then never looked back. Been doing Naptown Scoop ever since.
So walk me through how it works. Like, are you, in terms of operations, are you writing the content every day? How are you curating the content? How do you build your list? Just anything you'd share about this business model of a local hyper-focused newsletter. What goes into it?
Yeah, so it's kind of an annoying business because it's two parts, and I like, next time I start a business, I want to. And I will, with this next one, be a one-part business where it's like your cleaning businesses. You have to get cleaning customers, and that's all you have to do. And obviously, you have to do a lot of back-end stuff, like hire cleaners and billing and all that sort of stuff too. But like every business has to do that. But in terms of your actual business model, all you have to do is get customers for cleaning. And so for the newsletter, it's a little bit annoying because you have to get subscribers, and then you have to get customers to advertise. So that's, I call it a two-part business, but That's effectively what I did. I was running Facebook ads to get subscribers, and I was trying to spend as much money as I could to get as many subscribers as I could as fast as possible so I could start selling advertising, because nobody wants to advertise when you have 800 subscribers.
Right.
You got to get a couple thousand or 10,000 or 5,000 or whatever. So I was running ads to get subscribers as fast as possible. And I was starting to kind of think about advertising. I wasn't doing any outbound. I had a link that if people wanted to inbound lead, then we could do that. So I had a couple people come up on that and sold a couple ads. But the real important thing was just kind of figuring out the content that people wanted.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I was writing it every day. I basically made a list of places, list of websites and social media pages that were producing good content about Annapolis regularly. And I would look at them every single day, in the morning and the evening. And in the morning, I would say, we're going to cover these five. And in the evening, I would say, a couple new things have happened, so we got to add these three. And then I would basically write a summary about them and put it out the next morning. And if you do that for 3.5 years in a row, without missing a day, good things happen.
Wow. Ryan, you're writing the newsletters daily. Is that right? Or do you have a writer?
Not anymore. I hired a writer about 9 months ago. I hired one writer. I quickly realized that even with one writer, she couldn't handle it all with a reasonable part-time schedule. So I hired a second one. And then I was writing probably 10% of it at that point. In the beginning, I was writing 100% of it. Now I probably write about 10% of it. So I have two writers now.
And Ryan, can you walk me through the monetization process? So how soon into writing it were you able to start selling ads in the space? And how much do ads now cost?
Yeah, so I was lucky and I sold ads in like the first month. It only had like 150 subscribers at the time. But somehow, I don't know how I thought of this. I must have seen somebody do this somewhere because I'm not smart enough to figure this out. This guy asked about ads and I said, yeah, you can buy ads. You can buy, what you buy, I think it was 6 ads for $500. And if you give me the money now, you can use the ads anytime you want in the next 6 months.
Oh, anytime. Wow. Yeah.
And I don't know how I came up with that, but I did. And he paid the $500. So within the first month, I had made $500. And I was like, cool, this is actually something. People will pay. This is a good sign. Obviously, this is not, it's not a great business just because one guy paid. But it's interesting that one guy paid and maybe more will pay and then more eventually did. At that point, like I said, it was 6 ads for $500. At this point, a single one of those ads that guy bought now cost $875. At that point, they were whatever 500 divided by 6 is, so a lot less.
And so do you sell one ad per newsletter, and currently it's around $875 per ad? Is that the monetization for this?
No, so we sell 3 kinds of ads per newsletter. There's 5 ads in every newsletter, and they range in price. And this is the top end of the price. If you buy multiples, then it goes down. Mm-hmm. But they range in price at the top end from $875 to $500. And then they go down probably about 20% off of that number, depending on if you're going to do 6 months or a year with us or 2 years even. We'll do 2-year contracts now, which is kind of crazy considering we've only been around for 3.5 years. So that's the monetization setup. There's 5 ads per newsletter. And, the great thing about having a digital product is that you can just kind of create more if you want. Like I have 5 ads, but I can create some more ads and throw them in there as long as they weren't too distracting from the content.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm focused on getting all of those, I call them the standard ads. Kind of pretty much all sold out first, or like, 80-90% sold out. And then we'll think about creating secondary products within the newsletter. But that's how it's set up for now.
And Ryan, and the price you mentioned,
all those that's ads per... and the rates we charge and the audience size.
Yeah. Yeah. It's under, but I said that the amount you charge is per ad placement, or is that for the week? Because you guys run a daily newsletter during the week, right? So is that per ad?
Yeah, that's one. $875 is for one single ad.
Dude, that is incredible, especially for like a local newsletter. I mean, I know large newsletters who aren't just focused on one city who don't monetize nearly as well as this. And I think maybe the fact that you guys are hyper-local makes the audience and the advertisers know, like, yeah, for sure, this is my target audience. Is that the reason why you think you can command these prices and this frequency?
Yeah, it's partly that. And then also within the town, it, just the level of engagement that we have versus the other options for digital advertising. Mm-hmm. We can command that premium. And maybe that won't always be the case. Maybe we won't always be the hot thing, but right now we are. And I'm going to take advantage of that in the pricing. We very rarely have people cancel because they're not actually getting a return on their ad spend. And that's mostly because we target kind of what I would call the right advertisers and make sure that we have one, realtors. Realtor can spend $20,000 with us a year. And if they get one or two listings out of their ads, the average home price here is like $850,000. They're going to make their money on the commissions. So we choose the right partners that can afford to pay those high rates. We don't have any ice cream shops advertising with us that are selling $6 ice cream cones. Plastic surgeons selling $5,000 procedures and $20,000 procedures. We have real estate agents who are looking for listings of $2 million houses. We pick the right. I just lost video.
All good. We can hear you still, so it's all good. Now we got a doom screen where you click your language over here, but all good. We can still hear.
We'll be back here in a second.
There we go.
And that ruined my focus. Hang on. We'll be back.
No, you're good. So just to talk out loud, you were kind of saying how you do have to pick the focus of who's actually advertising in the newsletter, right? The people who have money, whose tickets are higher, they're going to be the actual payers. In my mind, it's so interesting because I think newsletters right now, at least regular newsletters, have reached a point of high saturation, meaning like I'm subscribed to so many newsletters, the majority of them I don't even open. But when you get to the local level, just like kind of what we're doing with the local business, it's a little bit different because your audience is very, very different as well, right? And you can get high open rates. And I don't think the people who are subscribed to newsletter locally, I don't think they're oversaturated with thought leader newsletters like a lot of people off of Twitter are, or a lot of people off LinkedIn are, right? It's a very different audience.
No, definitely. I think it's funny. I see tweets a lot about the newsletter bubble. And I'm like, dude, the amount of people I explain my newsletter to in Annapolis, they're like, it's a what? They don't know what a newsletter is. And I'm like, well, it's kind of like Morning Brew. You ever heard of Morning Brew? And they're like, what? I don't know what that is. I'm like, The Hustle? And they're like, nope. The Skim? Oh yeah, I think I might have heard of that. I had a girlfriend who read that one time. These people, there is no, everybody is, the world is not on Twitter. It is not people who are signed up for Sawhill Bloom's newsletter and also The Hustle and Morning Brew and Axios Local and Emerging Tech Brew and Retail Brew and all these things. Like I'm, ExecSum from Liquidity and all these newsletters, like I have that same problem as you, where I don't even get them in the newsletters. I don't get a lot of those thought leader newsletters. I only basically get newsletters, and I don't even open those every day.
Yeah.
If I don't read all my newsletters, that's 25 minutes I can save. And I won't know what's going on in the world, but I don't really need to know what's going on in the world. I just need to know what's going on in Annapolis.
And
be good.
Ryan, I got a question about the monetization.
Really exist so much in local newsletter.
Yeah. So like, I think the local bubble in general, like when you're going to open up a business, is so incredible because like, can you reach $20 million? Probably not, right? Like unless you have like a very high ticket type of service, maybe you could get there, but it's so insulated. It's so protected. It's so hyper niche. It's going to be really hard for other people to penetrate that. And it kind of creates a nice moat for you, especially if you want a really sweet lifestyle business. I think that's the beauty of local. Ryan, can you copy and paste this to multiple markets and run it yourself, or is it way too involved to do that?
So the way that I like to do it, no. In the beginning, when I first started this, I didn't really have much of a plan, but I did think, and I always just picked this number because it sounded great. And I was like, I'm going to get 100 of these things together. I want to own 100 of these local newsletters. I'm going to get each one to do $1 million a year in revenue. and that'll be $100 million business. That'll be wildly profitable because it does not require that much staff.
Yeah.
Like at least 50% margins. And I can either make $50 million a year or I can then go sell it for crazy high numbers. And that was like my plan for the last 3 years. And then I always take about 2 weeks off over Christmas to really think about the last year and how I want the next year to go. And I was doing that this year. And I was talking to a very smart friend you might know on Twitter named Connor Gross. And I was like, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to run up under these things.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it the way that I want. I am in the town, very present. I'm the face of this thing. For better or worse, I've become, people call me a local celebrity in town. Like, mm-hmm. It's very involved and dependent on me. And it could not, I wouldn't be able to do that again in the second city and also keep doing it in Annapolis. And so I would either have to find 100 or 99 of me to do that in 99 other cities, and then also run those 99 newsletters, which would effectively, because they kind of operate independently, would be like running 100 businesses at one time. And that's the thought that made me really look at it and be like, this problem, you're probably not going to do that. You're probably not going to get this to where you thought you were in the beginning. You also don't have backing and you don't want backing on it financially to get to that point in the time that you probably would. You know, like the normal startup route for this, like I like bootstrapping. So I decided not to do that. And after I decided not to do that, I decided that I would give away all the secrets to doing that because now I'm not trying to, you know, do this revolutionary thing, or it's not even that revolutionary, but I have my own way of doing it that I think is great. And I'm not trying to protect that anymore because I'm not trying to do it in 100 cities. So I started teaching people how to do it. And then ironically, through that, I started finding those people that could have been those one of those 99 people that operates. And I've now started to talk to the people like that about partnering and owning a newsletter with them in their town. And they'll be that boots on the ground person. And I'll be kind of like the operations person and the, you know, letting them, you know, basically almost like a franchise, except instead of a franchise and franchise fee, it's just we're partners. But like, if they have my system and they follow it and they're the local boots on the ground, they're going to get bigger faster than they would if they were not with me. And I'm going to have a newsletter that I wouldn't be able to have otherwise. So I probably will not, I'm not going for 100 anymore. That was my crazy goal in the beginning. But I think now over the next couple of years, I'm trying to find like 10, 15, 20 of these local partners that I can own a little slice of the newsletter in their town. And, you know, still kind of, it would definitely approach a little bit more into lifestyle business at that point, rather than, you know, shoot for the moon, kind of like still startup route, but also would have a pretty good amount of work involved with at least being a part owner and a very involved part owner in 20 of these things around the country.
Definitely. I love it, man. Ryan, what is that business called? And also, if people want to find you or that business, that new business where you teach people how to do it, how can they find that?
Yeah, so like I said, my main thing is called Naptown Scoop. I've definitely leaned hard into the ice cream theme. So the business where I'm teaching people how to do this is called Life of Scoop. And my Twitter handle is @lifeof_scoop. You can go to lifeofscoop.behive.com to get on a free newsletter where I once a week talk about local newsletters and give really tactical advice on how to actually do it. Like last Thursday, we were talking about growing using Facebook groups. The week before was growing using referral programs. I'm not sure what this week will be yet, to be completely honest, but it's like actually, it's not like reading theoretical knowledge of like, hey, yeah, you could do this. It's like, no, if you're doing this, here's how to set up your referral program for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, now that I'm not like trying to protect this thing, go big and be like the traditional startup route, I'm giving away all my secrets. You know, some of them I don't give away for free. Like, you know, I do have a course where I, you know, 5-day starter kit, I call it, where it's like, if you don't have a local newsletter and you want one, then take this thing. And by the end of 5 days, you'll have one.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't answer all of the questions that I have anymore. So I do charge for the consulting time, but there are no secrets on these calls or in these emails or anything like that. My whole model is kind of out there for the world to see. And the real advantage, if I do end up going with a partner, would be more just like the actual involvement of my help rather than any kind of secret sauce. There's always probably a couple of things you keep in your back pocket and you know would share with your partners before you end up, or I would share with my partners before I end up sharing with the list. But for the most part, there's no holds barred.
Yeah, I love it, man. Well, Ryan, we'll put all of those links in the show notes. And thanks so much for hopping on, dude. That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Neil.
That's good.